Welcome to the Rock Fight, where we speak our truth, slay sacred cows, and sometimes agree to disagree. This is an outdoor podcast that aims for the head. I'm Colin True, and today we are going behind the scenes of the outdoor industry with Wes Allen, who is one of the more vocal members and leaders in our community, so we can get a little deeper into what's happening at retail, with brands, and with the industry in general. Wes is one of the principals at Sunlight Sports, an outdoor specialty dealer in Cody, Wyoming, but he also spent nearly a decade working at REI and was also the national sales manager for Chaco in the mid-2000s, right when the famed sandal brand was acquired by Wolverine. Wes has also served as the president of the Grassroots Outdoor Alliance, a community of some of the best outdoor retailers in the country. He's become a leading voice in our industry on platforms such as LinkedIn and recently contributed a piece to the OR Daily. So to go a little deeper in the business of the outdoors, there was really no one better to talk to, and he's here today to get into what's happening at the register and with the brands that make up our industry. Welcome back to the Rock Fight, where today it's the state of outdoor retail with Wes Allen. All right, well, Wes Allen is finally on the Rock Fight. It's been a long time coming, but welcome to the show, Wes.
Hey, I'm really happy to be here, Colin. This is great. Very fun.
Well, for your first time, I kind of want to hit some broader topics that we've covered here on the show, kind of get the specialty retail perspective. You know, it looks like your background is similar to mine, that you came up through retail, but also spent time working on the brand side. We were talking about you were there for the Wolverine acquisition of Chaco, and then kind of went back to probably for the last decade or so. I can't speak. You've been back on the retail side of things. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's right. It's been 14 years next month since I came back onto the retail side.
How's the retail side going?
Well, there are positives. It's you know, outdoor retail right now is a bit of a battlefield. It's really rough right now. I'll just be quite frank.
Well, let's actually talk a little bit about, you know, kind of the role of the outdoor retailer, right? Because the longest time I think the role of the outdoor retailer was to get people ready to go outside. That was where it all started. You know, Dr. Rachel Gross, who recently put out a book, she was been on another podcast I did, and she described it as like, adventure starts at the gear shop. That's kind of been the mentality we've had with the outdoor industry, at least in the United States. So, you know, guiding people into these sports, helping to arm them for what they will or could encounter. I mean, is that still basically the mission from your point of view?
Yeah, I think overall that's the mission. I think everybody's got very similar motivations for doing this if you're a specialty outdoor retailer. I don't know if you remember the old movie Gross Point Blank.
Love that movie.
John Cusack movie. I love it too. And he's talking about how everybody gets into being an assassin. They've all got their different things. Like some people fight for freedom or against like Marxism or whatever it might be. Outdoor retailers are like that. They've all got their origin story. People sometimes are really into it because they want to get kids outside. That's like what Sunlight Sports is about. Like there are people who are like motivated by getting people to get into the outdoors, so they're engaged in the conservation movement. Well, you know, those two things are kind of the big pieces, but at its heart, it is about getting people geared up and outside. You know, we are supposed to be the launching point. We're supposed to be an inspirational, like, springboard to get people to go out and hike and bike and kayak and ski and do all those things.
So who's coming in the store these days? Is it basically the same? I mean, do you see a difference in the consumers who show up versus 10 years ago?
You know, it is very similar. I think that as you see the industry market to different people, you see a little bit of you see warbles in the signal a little bit. There's always this kind of core group of people, and you know, they might look different from one another, and they've got different backgrounds, but they...
See, it's easy to fumble your words on a podcast.
Yeah, okay. So let's try this again. I know you're going to edit it, so here we are.
Not now.
Oh, God. Oh, I fell into the classic trap. Yeah, they, you know, there's a continuity in the customer.
Yeah.
You know, but one of the big things that we've seen, and we saw it starting in 2020, is you saw that core customer, but all of a sudden that core customer is surrounded by a bunch of other people that just wanted to get outside because there was nothing else to do because they were locked down, right? And now as we see that in our rearview mirror and all the effects of COVID and the lockdowns, what you see are, you know, we're getting back to that core consumer that was there before. I think that there, you know, there's a lot of conversation. I think it's true. I think there's still a little bit of leftover traffic from just how big outdoor got. There are a few more people coming in, but it is back down to that core consumer.
Yeah, I think that there was a report from the OIA that came out yesterday. And like a lot of reports I've seen from the OIA and other, you know, groups, like it was a little, I had a tough time deciphering it. Maybe you had an easier time than me kind of going through it and looking at it, to give it, given what you do. But the one thing I did notice was the participation numbers. Yes. And if you look, you saw coming into 2023, that was on the decline versus where it was in 2020. And I didn't take that as, oh, no, you know, like that people are declining. It's like, nah, it's probably more of a return to the way it used to be. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's very fair. And I think it's quite accurate. You know, I have a lot of thoughts on that OIA thing. And actually, later today, I'm going to be on one of the webinars they're going to do to talk more in depth about it. But yeah, I think it's okay. I think that there are going to be a lot of people in brands and in associations and retailers that are disappointed that we didn't keep those people.
Yeah.
But I think that we were never going to.
Hey, you can't do anything except go outside. Like, what do you think's going to happen?
Right. Exactly. Right. They're going to go outside, and some people are going to be like, oh, crap, there's mud and bugs. I do not like this.
Right. Oh, and oh, hey, the movie theater's back open again? Sweet.
Sweet.
Oh, my God. This is great.
Yeah. And that's fine. It's okay, right?
Well, and I think the other thing I was thinking about, because I was reading some of the coverage about Ibex coming back, and then there was a thing in the Daily yesterday about that. And, you know, I think this is where we can kind of credit, not credit, but like, I don't want to give credit to COVID, but it's like what happened during COVID, I kind of shining a light on why brick and mortar retail is still important as well. Because I remember, I mean, I was working for Polar Tech when Ted Manning took, you know, Ibex and said, we're going D2C. And at the time, and I know this, I'm sure this is going to get your hackles up, but at the time it seemed like a rational decision. I mean, all the brands we were working with, D2C. I mean, everything, it's like, if you're going to start a brand now, why would you go to a retailer? It's dying. Sports Authority closing. All these big Sears going out of business. Like, why would you go wholesale? Why wouldn't you just keep that margin for yourself? And it does feel like, I mean, there's a little revisionist history going back on it. It's like, you know, what's happening? How could you do that? It's like, well, because that's what was happening in 2017. At the same time, you know, there's silver linings in everything. I kind of wonder if that's sort of the coming out of COVID and everyone's like, oh, actually, you know what? It's really nice to engage with other people. It's nice to walk into a store and have that, you know, that community and that environment.
Yeah.
Is that kind of a silver lining you think we can take out of the COVID situation?
Well, I think it is a silver lining. I think, you know, one of the things I would say about that whole narrative, and
yeah.
Ted and I had like an energetic conversation about Ibex when they did that. You know, I think the thing is that there was a very much VC money driven narrative about retailers shutting down. You know, why wouldn't you do it direct and all that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, like that was quite a story that people were spinning, but at the small shops, that didn't happen. Like,
it did not happen.
It kept growing, right? Through COVID and everything else. And yeah, like Sears and Sports Authority and a bunch of those people went down. But the value, you know, the value that VC money was trying to extract from the direct connections to customers, that value was always going to be a little bit fleeting. And I would say it's a little bit shallow. I think anybody who's going to do just a D2C model would need to adjust their expectations, because you're really going to be profitable with super fans. You're going to be profitable with people who love that brand, who are going to go to your website all the time, who can't wait for you to release your next thing. Guess what? That's not 95% of people, right? you have to have at least an onboarding process for super fans,
right.
If nothing else, and that's really what wholesale distribution in a small shop, in a chain, all those kinds of things. That is the healthy piece that a brand can take away, is they can on-ramp people who love them. And that is, that's my job as a specialty retailer. If I look at the, not to get on too much of a soapbox, but if I look at the ecosystem in the outdoor space, like Sunlight Sports' job is to serve our local consumers and to introduce them to brands that they love and products that they like. And, in a good partnership with a brand, what happens then is that the customer maybe discovers, gets talked about, we talk about the brand to a consumer. Mm-hmm. We sell something, and then they might buy something direct. That's a healthy ecosystem, because everybody's going to win. What happens, though, and what happened around COVID and what has happened since, is that there's such a desperation from brands to keep selling direct that they are damaging themselves. They have one lever to pull. The one lever is price. And, discounting your product is the exact thing you want to do if you want to turn people off from your brand.
Well, I think reflecting back on the retail, those days when it's sort of like, oh, it's the changing marketplace. Like, actually, no, what it was is you had, poor retail models, right? And,
yes.
And it was being exposed by this now additional bit that is direct to consumer. I remember when I was national sales manager for Goo for a brief stint, and I remember going to some bike shops in like 2012, 2013 in like Portland. And I'm sure you have these stories both in retail and when you were working for brands as well, where you hear the what an owner or a buyer is saying, and you kind of run it through your bullshit detector and see if it lines up. And it's like, I remember somebody like, oh, God, we're just struggling. These shops up the street are opening up and they're taking all of our business. And I remember sitting there being like, in my head thinking, so what are you going to do?
Right.
That sucks. It was probably way easier when that wasn't happening. But it is happening, so are you just going to roll over? What are you going to do? And I think that's a little bit of what kind of happened with some of those folks who were like, oh, well, that retail chain's going out of business. It must be a problem with the retail. It's like, no, it was a problem with that retailer. And
yes.
Then now I wonder if the brands are kind of facing that element of it as well. Like, has retail kind of come out on the other side? And then now we're starting to see, the Code Epoxies who are like, well, we got to have wholesale now. Or the Allbirds, right, or who... we're going to be the next big thing. And to your point, realize, oh, actually, yeah, we kind of need these guys,
Yeah. And, you talk about Allbirds. Their new CEO, Joe Vernacchio, man,
yeah.
that guy's actually super solid. There's he was the president of Mountain Hardware. And,
yes, he was.
The changes he made actually put Mountain Hardware on a really good course right now. And I think the leadership that there is continuing it. But to your point, I think that brands are I think to their disappointment they're still so reliant on retailers, and when they make bad
100%.
Bets on retailers like Sports Authority, like mm-hmm. some of those other things have gone away, like it's easy to paint all of retail with a broad brush. I don't think it's accurate.
So last thing on retail, I was kind of thinking about it, so I'm going to get a chance to go to the Grassroots Outdoor Alliance show coming up in June, and I was just kind of taking a look at who's going to be going, and a lot of names that I remember from my tech rep days of like the early aughts, right? Just still all kicking. Some that were missing, some new ones, but not a lot of new ones, I didn't think. Maybe I'm wrong. But do you fear that there are not enough new retailers? Is this a little bit of the old guard when you look at the specialty retail scene in the outdoor industry? Like, are enough new faces entering the chat here?
No, there's not enough new ones. And, I think it is... There have been some additions, and there's some cool young stores that have popped up. I think about Roads, Rivers, and Trails over in Cincinnati, or Three Rivers Outdoors in Pittsburgh, or Slim Pickens down in Texas. There are people that have entered the market recently that are doing some great stuff. But, the outdoor industry just in general is not conducive to new shops or new brands sticking around for very long. And that's a huge problem. It is a real challenge. And I think you can talk about it on both sides. But, you know, one of the things that's gone on with the specialty retailers, because when I go to the Grassroots Show, I see a lot of people that I used to sell to when I was at Chaco. And they're the same people, right? The folks that have survived specialty retail, you know, one of the conundrums is they tend to have a pretty conservative business model. They have to a conservative buy. They do all those things. The people who take big risks have not succeeded. Yeah. And what's happened is, you know, the old guard has kept chugging along. You see people pop up. You see people go away. And I think that that is something that the whole piece, grassroots, individual, outdoor retailers, and the brands really need to take a look at and decide to solve if we want the industry to maintain health going forward.
Yeah, you and I, when we first kind of started chatting over LinkedIn, it's like, and you got to mention that, you know, you had spent time at REI, and, you know, and I definitely have had some folks write in who think maybe I'm a little too harsh on, like, chain outdoor retail versus kind of favoring the specialty retailers. And look, I mean, some of that is just selfish, like, you know, specialty shops are more fun to hang out. let's just be honest. Yeah. You know, there's cool personalities and there's cool things going on. And look, you know, and you're the tastemakers, right? You know, the ones who kind of really get things going and kind of the pulse of the outdoor community. But there is a healthy balance. So, like, there's a healthy ecosystem there of, like, the roles that everybody's played. I've kind of been kicking around for a long time an episode about giving REI some credit because, you know, there's ideas and things that need to happen in the industry and the community that you need the scale of an REI, right? Yes. You know, if we put it all on your shoulders to say, hey, Sunlight, you know, can you solve the DEI and, you know, and the LGBTQ plus, you know, inequality problems in the outdoor industry, you're like, well, we can do it in Cody.
Right.
You know, like, exactly. But you go in any REI and what's on the walls, like, here's the local clubs, here's the come and hike with us and trying to include the larger community. And then, you know, on the brand side, you obviously need to have the brands too. And we're going to get into the brands in a second. But I do think that is something we all have to keep in mind is like, there's a real balance to how we have to kind of like keep this thing going.
There is. And I think, like you said, REI is a really important part of a healthy ecosystem. I will, you know, I worked for them for almost a decade. And I loved being there. The REI that I worked at is not the REI that exists right now. And, you know, it's a little inside baseball, but of course, this is an inside baseball podcast, really, for the outdoor industry. So I will say, you know, that the challenge simply is that REI is not fulfilling their role for brands right now. And historically, how brands have worked with REI was very dependable. They're good planners. You might not agree with everything that they did. And I didn't, I still don't, but you knew what you were going to get from them, right? They were the benevolent 800-pound gorilla. There was a point where they kept Arc'teryx afloat. They gave them money to keep them from going out of business, right? Yeah. So they've done some very positive things in the industry. Last 24 months, they're one of the things that's causing the most problems. And, you know, that leadership team in Seattle, we need them to get their stuff together. We really do. Because if REI goes out or, you know, they can't maintain the position that they have right now for whatever reason, that's going to that's going to be cataclysmic for a lot of good people in the outdoor industry. They do not have it together right now. And I will just say that. They need to get it together.
If you'd like proof of that, just search for REI on Reddit. There are several active subreddits with some spicy opinions about current REI leadership, let's say.
I have read some of those subreddits, and spicy, yes. They are very spicy.
How did you describe your conversation with Ted Manning? Energetic? That's what these are as well.
They are, man. And, I'm not going to I don't want to betray any confidences, but man, you talk to brands right now and they would, if they weren't afraid of damaging their business or being fired, They would be out there with all the torches and pitchforks right now.
Yeah,
and,
right.
I mean, right. behind the scenes, it's a thing. And we need REI to be good. We need REI to be healthy. You know, one of the things to think about, because I'm reflecting back on your conversations about the bike shops in Portland. Mm-hmm. You know, we're at the point where we've reached a tipping point where REI's model, and, you know, I don't want this to be an REI podcast, but REI's model back in the day was they were going into maybe communities where they didn't there wasn't outdoor shop representation. They were going to go into suburbs that weren't served by independent outdoor or whatever. And that was a healthy piece of growth for the industry. I think that they really believed in that. You know, now we're looking at a REI store about to open in Durango, Colorado.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, the conversation is, oh, yeah, we have all these active members there. Well, there's also, like, it's a town of, I mean, the area is less than 40,000 people, right? There's 10 outdoor shops. There's, like, 13 bike shops. There's all this. Them going in isn't going to do anything positive. All you're going to do is you're going to trade dollars in between the small shops and REI and, you know, like, it's a zero-sum game right there in Durango. Those are the kind of decisions you would want them to rethink. There's plenty of room still to get outdoor industry product out to people who don't have easy access to it, maybe. But doing those kinds of moves like the Durango store is not what we need from them.
Well, it's a good segue into kind of a more of a brand conversation, too, because I think that has been what's led to a lot of the problems we're having now. And a lot of my harping about like CR opening 26 new stores and all those things is there seems to be a continued approach by evidenced by REI opening store in Durango and by what brands are making and things like that, that there's this limitless demand for all of these products. And if that's the case, then could we just rename ourselves the fashion industry or say we're part of the fashion industry? Because that's not the case. And part of the reason I wanted to do this podcast, it's not to sit here and just like beat everybody up. It's because I care and I love this stuff. But also, I don't like bullshit. It's kind of like if you're saying to me that, hey, man, we're going to make as much stuff as possible so we can make as much money possible, and that's our mission. I'll say, all right, good luck with that. Go do that. But you're telling me that, like, we care about the environment, and we care about outdoor recreation and inclusion and all these things. It's like, yeah, but, okay, so then that's two very different things. And to your exact point, like, what does opening an REI in Durango do other than just you're going to go try and steal share from who's already there? You're not, like you said, you're trading dollars. You're not going to sell. It's not going to all of a sudden be like, oh, we have so many more opportunities to buy things in Durango. Like the same 10,000 people live there. You know?
Right. and if they really needed REI brand stuff, they have the internet. Like, it's, well, you know.
D2C, back to D2C. Here we
right,
go.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
You know, it's when you start talking about brands, it gets really complicated because I think that, you know, my take on this is, these brands, these huge organizations, and I'm going to pick on one of them, VF, they're made up of a bunch of people who really want to do the right thing. You know, you walk into the North Face. I have an affinity for the North Face. Like, there was a podcast that you did, you know, in a recent episode where you're talking about the products and the way you thought about them previously, the things that actually it was a Cotopaxi episode.
Oh, they're known for, like the things they kind of
right.
The product innovations that they've they've changed things by making this thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
There was a moment, the moment that I knew that I was going to be, I wanted to make the outdoor industry my career and I wanted to stay in there. Was I was working at Sunlight back in the 90s and. I remember clearly I did this hike on the Brown Basin Trail. It goes into a huge remote wilderness. And the thing that I remember the most about that was my North Face Mountain Light jacket. It was red and black. And it's a great piece. It was late October, early November. It was starting to snow. And I did this trip. And I got back down to the car and I was like, this thing is unbelievable. I just had a great day and this thing performed exactly like they said it would. From that moment on, I've had an affinity for the North Face. You know, that brand is made up of a bunch of people who really are trying to do the right thing. Their behavior in the market as a brand over the last 18 months has not been ideal. I think that's the polite way to do it. And they are embodying the, we're going to try to make as much money as we can by making as much stuff as we can, and then we're going to try to sell it any way that we're able. And so let's get back to limitless demand. It turns out there's not a limitless demand for North Face product, and they found that out again and again and again. They've had to, you know, discount and send 8 million emails and do all these things. Mm-hmm. The soak rate on product from the North Face is not as high as they'd hoped. And everybody in the world is not going to buy North Face. There's a healthy brand. There's money to be made with the North Face. There's a healthy brand to be had there. It's not there right now because they're finding out that they can't sell all that stuff.
So, because that's a really good point, right? And it goes back to kind of the boom coming out of the 90s and early 2000s. And, you know, every new outdoor brand being like, we're going to get acquired and be the next big thing.
Yeah.
And I remember that first was pointed out to me by somebody I worked with, and they had, we were at OR probably 10 years ago at this point. And they're like, what do you think the open to buy is? How much of the open to buy, like looking at this show, do you think is controlled by like a publicly traded entity? We're like 80%? Like, yeah, probably. Patagonia, the only thing that was still independent at the time, right?
Yeah.
Of the big apparel brands anyway. And, you know, and I think that's just that we're still suffering from that. Like, you're absolutely right that, you know, the people on the inside of most of these places feel like they're doing the right thing. They feel like, you know, that they're creating products that matter, even if, you know, how then they're being marketed and distributed kind of says otherwise. So, but when you now, as working at a store, you know, you're engaging with newer brands. I think about, you know, the conversation I had with Justin a couple of weeks ago about, you know, the Cott brand that he went to pick up, he went to go pick up something from a local maker,
right?
This guy who started as, it's a classic outdoor story. Somebody's like, I want to create a new product that's going to benefit the person who wants to sleep in the back of their car. And he's all fired up about it. You know, when you're having those kinds of conversations, are those conversations still to be had? Are you having less of them? Are there more of them? Do you feel like the kind of up and coming brand is still an opportunity in the outdoor space, or is it kind of like just overrun by these kind of big publicly traded companies?
I would love, and we work really hard to try to find those up and coming brands, right?
Yeah. But
man, there's no room to breathe for them. You know, they can scale to a certain, you know, getting to the first $1 million of sales is probably absolutely doable for most of these brands, but that's not enough to keep going. And it's almost impossible to get past that, right? Because the big publicly traded people, the established brands, they take a lot of the air out of the room. One of the things that's really admirable about Cotopaxi is it is one of the very few brands that has made an impact that started in the last 10 to 15 years.
Right? Agreed. Yeah.
It's almost, I would actually ask you, okay, there are small brands that are in the industry, and like, I don't want to belittle the success that somebody who's doing $1 million or $2 million in sales a year is having, because that's a lot of work, and congrats, like, keep going. Name, besides Cotopaxi, a brand that you would consider to be significant in the outdoor industry that started in the last 15 years.
Define significant.
Like, if somebody's going to talk about product or activity,
yeah,
they're a natural inclusion in a conversation. Not necessary, you know, not the local maker, not Justin going and buying that Cott, because
yeah, right.
I went and looked up that company after he said it, and the stuff seems super cool. But like, this is the thought experiment that I do. It's like, what brands independently owned have popped up in less than 15 years?
I mean, Cotopaxi is easily the leading example. Because yes. I mean, the things I talked about on that episode, going from truly D2C to now in 1,000 locations. And I'm sure that map includes all the REIs and everywhere. But whatever, it doesn't matter. They're in 1,000 brick and mortar stores per their store locator.
Yep.
So even if they're fudging it a little bit, it's still a pretty decent amount of locations. You can find it in a lot of places. Everything else, you're right, is pretty niche. I would think like a, you know, like there's... Man, yeah, it's just, well, that's kind of the thing too. It's still all a lot of the same players at the end of the day. And honestly, that's why I made the Cotopaxi episode. I said to someone recently who asked me about it, and it just came out this week, but we were talking about it a couple of days ago. I said, and no offense to these brands I'm going to mention, but I'm not about to make an episode about Kool or Kavu or any of these sort of other brands who've been around for a long time, but don't really... You know, what do they really bring to the table other than, hey, we make outdoor stuff too? And it's fine. I would wear a lot of the stuff that they make. But Cotopaxi, to your point, they kind of broke through. But they feel like they're really doing themselves a disservice by the quality of fabrics that they're choosing for their products, which is not good. And I do not mind. And I'll say that to anybody from Cotopaxi who comes on this podcast. And they're burying their most interesting story, which I actually got some responses to about, well, they're probably not all made from scraps in the Del Dia line and all that kind of stuff. I mean, they're probably not. But at the same time, as a marketing story, it's the most interesting thing you do. And it's like on the third page of your website. So stop trying to hang with these other big brands we're talking about who are all financed by these massive organizations and talk about what makes you different, because that's where the success has always been in the outdoor industry. What makes you different? Yep. What problem are you solving? That was a really long way to answer your question.
No, but that's exactly right. Like when I go back and I do this thought experiment, like I come back, like once you get past, you click past Cotopaxi, and I'm going to caveat this by saying that like we're not a cycling store. I haven't really kept my eye there or paddling very much. But like if as I cycle through like camping, outdoor, climbing, ski that we do, like the next ones back are like Nemo and Big Agnes.
Well, and Big Agnes has been around like 20 plus years. Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. And Nemo too. Remember the inflatable tent from Nemo blowing up OR back in the day, right?
Yeah.
And they're getting a lot of press and they're doing a lot of great things, but they're not brand new.
They're not. But they're older than Cotopaxi.
Yeah.
The newest thing we have. I think, you know, we're circling back and this is a problem. Because it's really hard to find, we're at a commoditization phase in outdoor where it's really hard to find the gap where you can provide a new answer to a question that we have. And, you know, it seems to be an intractable problem right now. I would love to see somebody come up with an answer to it. I don't know what it is.
I think it's the same old, and I know I've harped on this a lot, but it's just, that was the real opinions that were formed by working for a textile manufacturer and sitting with all these brands and hearing them say, we want innovation and we're going to market an innovation. And I can tell you that most of like the fabric breakthroughs anyway, most of them, like breakthroughs, not like iterations or whatever, happened before the year 2000 happened. Like 1998 was a huge year in fabric innovation. And I could talk about that all day long and bore you to tears. But since then, it's been iterative. It's been little things. Like, oh, this is cool. That's different. Whatever. So then when I see that in 2020, 21, 22, 23, 24, it's like we're still marketing and talking about technical innovations as a brand or mark or product story. Like, that's just, it's not true. And there are other things being left on the table, like sustainability and circularity, that could be, that are more interesting and frankly, like what we actually need, you know? So, but that's hard.
It is hard, but it provides really good air cover when people talk about it, right?
Right.
When you're talking about the fact that the last major advance in materializations for outerwear came 26 years ago, like my stomach just curled up a little bit more into a ball. I'm like, yeah,
right?
It's true. And I think that makes Cotopaxi conversation really interesting because
I agree.
You know, they formed up and they were like this do good thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people who work there really believe in that. It was a great brand statement. They had that Del Dia thing where they were picking up scraps. You know, like the picture they painted was them running around behind Osprey and Gregory, picking up scraps and sewing them back together.
Right.
Great story. But again, I think they would be the first to admit that, like, they're trying to figure out where they go from here.
Last thing I want to talk to you about is sort of just kind of the industry in general. Like, I definitely get a little weary of the kind of pervasive, you know, trade show and industry gathering conversation that's constantly going on. And I feel like it's the loudest voice in the room that gets heard because it's mostly guys our age who just, you know, like miss going to Salt Lake City twice a year and having fun. Yeah. And do you want to say we need to do this again? And I just sort of like, what are we really missing? Like, I don't know. Frankly, you can make the case that it's better not to have the mandatory twice a year, like, you know, boondoggle in Salt Lake City. I mean, do you think we're getting leadership on this from like the OIA? Do you think we need more? Is this a moot point? Should we move past it? Do we need it?
Wow. Well, I mean, that's just a little question. Okay, so here's what
we
I would say.
We have 30 seconds. No. No.
Okay, here's what I would say. I miss the old ORs, and I think a bunch of guys our age are that way, and that's part of that conversation. The thing that I would push back a little bit on here is, first of all, you know, tying leadership to trade show. It has been that way forever. You know, OIA was completely funded by the funds that they got from Emerald as they did OR. Right. They were getting millions of dollars a year as part of the contract to do Outdoor Retailer. And when Outdoor Retailer changed and went down in size and has flipped around in different places, that funding stream has gone away from OIA, and it's reduced their ability to convene the leadership in the industry. And I know that people who are there are still trying. Here's the thing that I would say is we need something. And I'm not sure that it has to be tied to a trade show. I don't know that I believe that. But I do believe that the outdoor industry is stuck. And there was a time, and who knows why it was going, who knows why it stopped, but there was a time where you could at least go to the industry breakfast and somebody would get up and say, hey, we're thinking about this now. Yeah. And everybody would like eat their bagel and go, huh, that's a really good point. Maybe we should do something. There, it's not.
I'm only laughing
anymore.
Because I have all these same memories.
Right. So it's not there now. There's not, you know, Gordon Seabury is not getting up at breakfast and talking about sustainability or DEI or circularity or any of those kinds of things. And I think that the proof that we need to do something to pull leadership together and set a little bit of a clearer vision is simply this. The things that brands are still talking about are the things that they were talking about at the last major attended or the last well-attended OR breakfast, right? We're still talking about sustainability, but not really doing anything positive about it. We're just making too much crap. We're talking about DEI, and it's all the same people still leading the brands, still the same people designing it, and we're designing for many of the same people.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have the next thing to work on, and we haven't been successful in the last things we talked about. The need and the opportunity is, and maybe this is looking at it through rose-colored glasses, but there was a moment, several moments, a decade where the outdoor industry would pull together and they would talk about inclusion and participation and make a difference. Mm-hmm. We're not doing that now. Like, we need something to happen. OIA was never really that, right? They would convene people, but then leadership would stand up and talk about it. OIA was the
conduit. Yeah.
And, you know, I think that is kind of that at-sea feeling that many of us in the industry are feeling right now.
Yeah.
And the cure that we need is to get everybody together and talk and not be stranded in their own brand bubbles.
This, you just made the case. I've heard so many people say we need to have a gathering, we need to do this. But again, no one's really been able to say, here's why, though. Because the basic needs are all being fulfilled in some way, right?
Yes.
And now that you, the way you point that out is great, is an excellent point. And now I kind of say there's two things that aren't happening that used to happen. And it's one, there's no that kind of getting together and putting yourself on display and being accountable to whatever was said last time, right? A little peer pressure, a little public shaming. And like, we just talked about all the, and like I said, the bullshit in the industry is what kind of motivated me to do this show. And it's because people say one thing and do something else. And that was an opportunity to kind of like hold people accountable to that. And I think I did an episode on this not that long ago. You know, if you go back and read old issues of Snooze, Bob Woodward and that crew, man, they pulled no punches. And if they thought you were misleading or greenwashing, and by the way, it's so funny reading those. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, Snooze was called Specialty News. It was for the listener, it was, a monthly magazine about the outdoor industry. And I've been writing about it weekly for our newsletter, and it's on our website, rockfight.co. Check them out. But they always had the Snooze view, and it was, they would call out brands. They would call out people. I mean, it was like, and that's another reason, again, why I started this podcast, is we kind of got in this safe world where you're not allowed to say anything. And these brands we hold up on high and don't really apply any criticism. And I think that missing that and now taking away the public gathering, which probably took the place of that because it got so big, has left us with what we've got. And you're absolutely right. And it's not going to change unless we bring some of it back. Somebody told me the other day that there are people now who've been in the industry long enough and have no recollection of the OIA rendezvous.
Yes.
And that to me is like, why don't we bring back the rendezvous? Like that could be, you don't need the trade part. We don't need the business part. What we need is the social part and like all the things you just described.
I am right there with you. And like that rendezvous style of event, we need to motivate people to go there and we need to motivate the right people to go there. And then we need to have the discussions that matter. I think that is the lifeline for us to stop. You know, we don't want to, the advert industry is awesome. And
it is awesome.
You know,
like, we're criticizing because we love it.
Yes. Like, you know, people, you know, I try to think about this now. Like, what great thing happened today because of the outdoor industry? Well, I'm going to tell you, living in a gate town for a national park, here in about 2 months, about 4 million people are going to go through and they're going to have a great experience in the outdoors. Yeah. That is, you know, that is what we are here for, to circle back to the beginning of it. You know, like, here's a great example. Here's something that I think about. Participation. We had that as a thing in the industry for a long time, and we got participation, like participation grew. Some of it was because of what brands did, and some of it was because of a virus. That's fine. We got that participation, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're in a spot where engagement and people going out and hiking and biking and paddling is great. Now we're in a spot where we need to manage some of that. We need to advocate for infrastructure to deal with the impacts of people going out and doing it. And we have a little bit of a group, the Outdoor Recreation Roundtable, that seems to be doing some good work there. But, you know, from the outdoor industry, if you suck it back in a little bit to the OR crowd, we don't have a really consistent plan. We don't have a standard, and we don't have something to move forward on. That's, you know, that's a small example of something that we can make a positive impact with as an industry. And I would love to see it because I think we need to do it. And I think, to even circle it back one more time, our industry is filled with people who are here because they want to do this kind of thing.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
They are working for us and not for Kraft or not for Nestle or whatever because they love being outside and they think there's a bigger purpose. Well, with a bunch of motivated people at all these different brands, this is our opportunity to get them together and aim them one direction. And instead of greenwashing and BSing our way through sustainability, make a difference.
All right, Wes, thanks very much for coming on. We can wrap it up there. Anything you want to, should we promote? Do we have an e-com store for Sunlight? Do people, you know, can they go there instead of REI.com? Or?
This is how old school it is. No, we do not. But if you're in Cody, Wyoming, why don't you pick up some gear at Sunlight? You don't have to buy it at REI before you leave home.
I hear it's going to be the hub for all of backcountry.com's clothing that they're selling. You guys bought it all, right?
Yeah, we have an entire concept shop. That is not true.
That was a lie, folks. Don't go to Cody looking for backcountry.com stuff. Did anyone buy Backcountry's house label?
I am not aware of anyone, but I'm sure somebody did.
I'm not going to cut this out. I emailed their PR folks, sent them the episode. Like, I would love to talk to someone. I sent it to them twice, zero response. So anyone from Backcountry that wants to come on and talk about this initiative, you are welcome to come on.
There are people from Backcountry that should be here, and I would... I will save that podcast in my favorites when it happens. I can't wait.
All right. Well, we can't wait to have you back on again. Thanks so much for coming on this time.
Thanks, man.
All right. That's the show for today. Want to weigh in on this rock fight or anything else we talk about? Reach out to the show by sending an email to myrockfight@gmail.com. Please make sure you're following The Rock Fight wherever you are listening and leave us a 5-star rating as well as a review. You can even write something snarky like, I listened to this podcast and all I got was a stone off the dome. In fact, we encourage snarky comments in the comments. The Rock Fight is a production of Rock Fight LLC. I'm Colin True. Thanks for listening. And here to take us out, how can he be satisfied when everything is overrated? It's Chris DeMakes with the Rock Fight fight song. We'll see you next time, Rock Fighters. Rock Fight.